with a $5 meal deal with new McValue. You pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello everybody, welcome back to Goldbridge Saves Football Podcast, and what a show we've got for you this week. Loads to discuss. VAR, well, it's getting serious. Where's Celine Dion? Because this is getting serious. VAR responding very quickly, the mainstream reacting predictably, all because of another bad weekend for VAR and officiating. It's been called out and it's gone too far. But has it gone far enough in relation to the PGMOL and why it's happening in the first place? We're also going to be talking about Ange. He could have lost his job by the time we've done this. Will is actually crying. And we'll be talking about Amrim, talking about Rashford, talking about the title race. The relegation race is hotting up. So much to get into. Hello, Will.
Hello, Mark. It's 7 a.m. We're here to talk about football, Ange future on the line, and, you know, this could be the final dawn. So get your impressions in. People are actually very, very, very happy with yours last week, which was the most surprising. But where do you want to start? Because it was another great weekend of Premier League football.
Yeah, make sure you're giving us a follow exclusively on audio now, the podcast now. So catch us every week, always out early on a Monday. But let's talk about this early topic on a Monday. So starts off with VAR at the weekend. I mean, I thought there was a catalogue of errors. I mean, let's not forget the assault on Endo at Anfield by Nciso. How's that not a red card? But the main one was the Lewis Skelly red card, straight red card from, yes, you've guessed it, Michael Oliver, who is a bad referee. But there are a lot of them as well. Second half, worst foul, in my opinion, by Gomez for Wolves. He gives him a yellow, which ends up being his second yellow and a red. Some people said, well, it's the same outcome. It's not. It's a three-match ban against a one-match ban. Walking contradiction. To be fair, you've got Ian Wright, Saturday night, Will. He wasn't very happy. He did a TikTok. You've got ex-head of referees, Keith Hackett, talking about scaremongering. Very much a strong reaction on Saturday night, I would say. But then Sunday, the PGMOL fought back. Apparently, Sky was saying they were disappointed by the sensationalist response from the media. We'll talk about that. And then we had the statement that they're going to report it to the police because some of the abuse had gone too far. It's almost like I said last night, there is two arguments here. There is the abuse, which I've got to say is expected, but is never acceptable. We can talk about that. But I also feel that it now, it's a bit like when England lost the Euros final on penalties. There was no analysis of that game because of all the racism that happened. And I feel like this is going to be the same, where it's now going to be all about Michael Oliver and the way referees are treated, which in a sense does sweep under the carpet the actual issue that we've been talking about 2 years.
But in a way, does it not all tie in together? Because, you know, I've trying to been thinking a little bit differently. I think we can come on here and what we have been doing for the last 2 years, and rightly so, is, you know, calling out the wrong decisions and the way the PGMOL, I've fumbled it already, the coffee's not kicked in, has been running. But I just think, is it not all sort of starting to tie into the same sort of area? Because hold your phones. Jamie Redknapp made a very good point on punditry, I thought, when he was talking about the issue. He was basically saying, basically an issue happens like that now and every fan group goes, it's corruption. Well, it can't be corruption for every team in the Premier League. It can't be corruption for every team up and down the land. And every time something like this happens, it's like, right, we are, as a fan base, being affected by this on an individual basis. We're being targeted. Mm. And, you know, even I get like that. You know, I was watching the Hollywood Derby on Thursday, and I'd had 5 to 6 Guinness, and they missed the handball, and I tweeted out something like, oh, the referee's on the take. I got rid of it just because I was like, what am I doing? Because I was like, referee's not on the take, but you whip yourself into such a frenzy that the referee in the League One game is going to be on that. And then obviously at the top level, it's magnified. You mentioned Ian Wright coming out afterwards, and rightly so, you would be as a fan. But I just think
rightly so, I like that. Yeah,
yeah, thanks, mate. Yeah, the coffee has kicked in. I think you would be whipping yourself into a storm of like, yes, oh, they're after us. But I think we're at a dangerous point now where everything. You know, and there's so many issues to discuss within VAR, but I just think we're at a tipping point where we just need to almost take a step back and go, hang on a minute. You know, like we're going to talk about, I think somebody tweeted out saying it was linked because his thoughts were Michael Oliver had sent off Lewis Skelly because he's a Newcastle fan. He was in a Newcastle shirt. They've got him in the Carabao Cup final. So it's all lit. You know, everyone's at the board, aren't they, with the rope linking it like it's a murder case. I just think we need to take a step back.
I read that yesterday, and I don't even know if it's true, but it was like apparently Michael Oliver cannot be involved in Newcastle games or any game that involves Newcastle's outcome because he's a Newcastle fan. I've never heard that before.
No.
And I'm glad I've never heard of it before because my assessment of him would be even worse knowing that. But I always thought he was crap without knowing that. So I'm quite, you know, conscience clear. What I would say is that let's take it back to the weekend. I think the PGMOL and Michael Oliver are very lucky that Arsenal managed to find a way to win that game with 10 men, because the reaction from Arsenal fans and non-Arsenal fans was pretty hot without the fact that Arsenal didn't lose the game. If they had lost the game, it just shows you the enormity of that decision. And I think if we talk about, I really want to look, this is Goldbridge Saves Football. We've been talking about this for a long time. So we're not, you know, there'll be a lot of people jumping on this on podcasts and on TV and mainstream and call-ins today who have been very quiet about this, I think, for a long time. We've been talking about it for a long time. And if you're a regular listener, you'll know. But go back to the Lewis Skelly yellow card. I think what Ian Wright said was spot on, and it would have been what we would say anyway, is that if you've played the game at any level, you know that's not a red card. And what I found disappointing was that VAR, Michael Oliver is not off the hook, but Michael Oliver has a reputation as a referee. I don't think it's corruption. I think if it's corruption, it's a different type of corruption where it's an internal corruption that is almost intrinsic to the way the PGMOL is run. You can have different types of corruption. And I think the allegations of corruption because he doesn't like Arsenal are going to be far-fetched. But the allegations that there is corruption, almost like an 80s organization whereby, you know, people who have bigger authority almost are unaccountable. I think Keith Hackett said this about scaremongering, who's a former head of referee. You almost know with the VAR that is a bad decision by Michael Oliver. It goes to VAR, and their job is to sort of go, we think you've got that wrong, Ollie, to make him go and look at it on the screen. Now, Jamie Carragher made a good point that for them to make him go to look at the screen, they can't say, we think you might want to have a look at this. They've got to say, we think you might have got it wrong. But Carragher was talking about it yesterday, almost like, no, you're getting VAR wrong. You can't. But the point is that decision should have been, we think you've got it. There's four people. You've done VAR in the summer. How many are in that room?
Well, it was too many when we were in there. But yeah, no, you got your... Four.
So four. If Michael Oliver's decision, let's be generous and say 80% say it wasn't and 20% think it was. I actually think more like 95% think it wasn't. You're telling me four people are going to go in that minority as well? They're not. What's happening is that it's Ollie. Or it's Tails. I mean, they've all got stupid bloody names like they're in a bloody Sonic the Hedgehog game. And that's the problem. I think Michael Oliver we heard the funnily enough, the Doku one last year where it should have been a penalty for Liverpool. We heard the audio of that and he's talking over the VAR before they've even had a chance to look at it. He's like, nah, nah, nah. And I think that's the big problem. I think that the PGMOL, the lack of accountability, they've also, Howard Webb plays into this as well. You can see that the senior referees like Anthony Taylor and Michael Oliver almost shouldn't have VAR because VAR never does its job with them. And that's the big problem for me is that, and I think Keith Hackett got it absolutely correct. The decision was absolutely shocking. But in real time, and that's the thing as well, is there not an arrogance, Will, that Michael Oliver has made that decision in real time and we're watching it in slow motion and some people, and I mean, I heard Jamie Carragher, I saw this yesterday, I want to get your thoughts on this as well. Yesterday morning, it, it was on Sky Sports, they said that the PGMR were disappointed by the mainstream reaction from ex-players being sensationalists. And I actually quote tweeted it and said, this afternoon on Sky, you can guarantee that's going to dilute. It was a bit like the Liverpool one where Carragher was going, it was a disgrace, the offside, and then 24 hours later, what are Liverpool doing a statement for? Because the PGMOL, they do have meetings with the mainstream broadcasters every couple of weeks. There is a good relationship there and conversations do take place. Can you just be a little bit nicer to us because we're getting a little bit of stick? Whether that's right or wrong, those things do happen. And lo and behold, you get Lee Hendry, Jamie Carragher and Jamie Redknapp at the end of the game yesterday, dialing it down a little bit, going, you know, the abuse is too far. Yeah. And even when you look at it, you can see why he's given it. I wouldn't have given it, but you can see why he's given it. And I thought, hold on a minute. We're now dialing back a little bit. It never should have been given. The abuse shouldn't happen, but it never should have been given. But the mainstream now will start helping the PGMOL out. And that, for me, is where the blame is for all of this. We'll talk about the abuse in a minute. But the PGMOL have had 2 years of warnings here, and they've never acted. Look at the Man United FA Cup game 2 weeks ago. That guy was refereeing again on Wednesday. That's the worst officiating I've ever seen. There's been no accountability. And we know, how many decisions have we spoken about over the last 2 years? Have any of those referees ever been held accountable? Or is it, we go again next week, they'll forget?
Yeah, look, I think we'll come back onto the abuse thing, because I think that's an interesting point in terms of how it all wraps in together in terms of like these specific decisions. But this is something we've highlighted for us, isn't it? I've said about the calibre of the people that they're attracting. And I think that's probably highlighted by the ones that are top of the game at the moment in consideration for the organisation, isn't it? It's Anthony Taylor and Michael Oliver. And you can't have an organisation where the people in the VAR room are scared to say, come to the screen, you've made a wrong decision.
Well, just to cut in, because you made a good point once. You know the offside of Liverpool's against Spurs, which was what, 18 months, 2 years ago?
Yeah.
You said, you've got a picture of him on your wall. There was a guy on the audio who was probably the work experience guy who said, who actually interjected, didn't he? And they sort of shouted over him and he was like, that's we've got that wrong. We need to tell. Shut up. We're playing on. And he was we need to do something here. Shut up. But that's all Howard Webb needed to do 2 years ago. He said, look, I'm going to give pay rises and tickets to Saudi to people who actually show potential. And that showing potential would be the person who told Michael Oliver to go and look at the screen on Saturday. I think they would be lauded as, you'd be a fucking hero. That's the point. Like, you'd be a hero.
He fought back.
But, imagine if, like, Michael Oliver gets that wrong and then VAR tells him to go and look at the screen. Everyone would be like, fair play. Who was that? And that's where they're going wrong. They've got this little clique of, let's protect people like Ollie and Tails. But actually, it's not even about bad officiating. If I'm being fair to Michael Oliver, in real time, first time, you can't see that. You can't know what's gone on. That's the whole point of VAR.
Yeah, and look, you say about it not being an 80s sort of, mafia organisation. We don't think it is in terms of corruption, but I don't think it's a very healthy organisation in terms of the way, that you look up and have to be lord over these.
They're arrogant, aren't they?
Yeah, we've said it before. They do attract quite a lot of narcissists in that way. But like in terms of the PGMOL, I've got it in front of me now. I don't think that's a very healthy organisation where you've got Howard Webb, who's at the top, and ex-referee. Then you've almost got these two top-tier referees who, yes, on that game on Saturday, fundamentally, if the organisation's different and the younger referees have more confidence to call out what is an incorrect decision, this all doesn't happen. So I think that the one thing they always get wrong is abuse aside, which we will get into and we will have a look at because I think it is important, they will not self-reflect. They will not look internally. They'll just go, this is wrong. We've tried this, blah, 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 blah. But they won't try and rectify the problem themselves and look at their organisation where you've got four blokes who are frightened to call out a decision that is wrong.
Well, how long ago was it? 2 years ago where I told you that when I was working at Talk Sport, I got a little bit of a message from a producer saying the PGMOL aren't happy with the tweet he did at the weekend.
Yeah.
And the tweet was something along the lines of, it wasn't even as blatant
this,
as they're
this
on.
This is his address. Go round.
No, it was like, it wasn't, it was along the lines of, this is fraudulent or something like that. But it was obviously very much me not saying it was fraudulent. It was more like, bloody hell, this, you know, check his bank account sort of stuff. So they monitor, look, they monitor everything, but they don't self-reflect. They remind me a lot of the Man United squad. You know, it's blame everybody else, but never look at the root cause. And let's talk about the abuse quickly, because we do want to talk about the weekend and Ange. There was some good football. I mean, bloody hell, what Amorim said about Rashford, and there's so much to pick into, and Bournemouth were brilliant again. But, you know, this is a podcast to try and save football as well. And I think I was doing the watch along yesterday, and obviously the statement from the PGMOL had come out, and somebody got into the super chats, and I think they thought they were making some sort of snowflake statement for those fence sitters of the UK and the world when they said he may have made a mistake, but is a mistake in officiating enough for a death threat? And I think they probably did a mic drop as they sent it, and I instantly, you know, I'm like, I went, hold on a minute. Yes, it is. And I saw the live chat going, what? What's he saying? I said, of course a bad officiating decision is a green light to a death threat. I mean, I said sell Rashford and got four death threats in half an hour. You know, if Jamie Oliver says, you know, no chicken Twizzlers at school, he's going to get death threats. You know, if Will chops his mullet off, the Mullet Society is going to send him a death threat. I mean, this is completely and utterly vile and unacceptable, by the way. I think nobody's going to defend abuse to Michael Oliver or his family or death threats. But for anybody to be sat here pontificating this morning going, oh, it's a disgrace. I mean, what world do you live in? What rock have you been living under? I mean, we live in a vile society, especially on social media. Of course. I mean, look at what happened when Saka and Rashford and Sancho missed penalties. We literally didn't talk about losing a Euros final under Southgate because it was just, quite rightly, a conversation about a vile pile-on of abuse and racism. So, sadly, I'm not surprised when tempers are running as high as they were on Saturday and frustration is running at the absolute limit with PGMOL. Of course, I'm not surprised that we get a statement about, you know, abuse and death threats and threats of violence against Michael Oliver and his family. It's disgusting. It's absolutely vile. And obviously, none of us are going to do it. And of course, nobody listening this would do it. You might get very angry, but if you're thinking about that sort of thing, you're completely missing the point. Michael Oliver's potentially a very nice person, even if he's a knobhead. It doesn't really matter. He's an official doing a job. If he's doing it badly, well, that's not actually his responsibility. He's got bosses, you know, who should be dealing with this. But that is. There's no debate about that. My issue with it is why is it happening? And there's a root cause that the PGMOL should have dealt with a long time ago.
Yeah, I just think the Jamie Redknapp point was quite interesting because I think that's the overriding narrative now, isn't it? Like before, probably before VAR and definitely before social media, you'd be like, oh, he's a shit ref, you know, and it'd be like, he's an awful ref. But now it's like, he's on the take. He's conspiring with me to make this. He's conspiring with this club to make this. And every time it is like this corruption angle, which, you know.
Do you think it would be better? Because you have it in the in the League One and you'll have it in the Championship next year. There is no VAR. So the spotlight's more on the referee. You get more mistakes, but then you probably are more subconsciously sympathetic because he's not protected by VAR. So he's going to make human errors. Whereas in the Premier League, the referees seem... It seems to have ramped up with referees because VAR is there to protect them. But then, as we've just been talking about, VAR seems to side with them, which makes the conspiracies even bigger. Yeah. You've been almost more protected as a referee if you're crap, but you haven't got VAR because people just go, they don't know what they're doing. It's not intentional. You know, they're not being protected or anything like that. They don't know what they're doing.
I think VAR almost like elongates the decision process and the talking process and everything around that. Whereas in League One, I don't even think there's goal line technology. So it's just literally, you feel angry and aggrieved with it, but it's very much like a short, sharp hit. Whereas these, they just seem to be going on for, you know, how much has it dominated the top of our podcast list? And I think with VAR, they just become it just becomes a bigger issue because of the spotlight that's thrown on it.
Look, we've got through it a lot there. Let's move back onto the football. But what have we been saying for 18 months? I will just leave it at this. The PGMOL are accountable for everything that's going on. It's all right blaming fans for getting angry and ex-players for being sensationalist, but the frustration is genuine and it's long held. And they are the people that can, you know, give out the medicine. They can. They just need to self-reflect. And I've said it for a long time. The big thing that I would do, Will, is I would break the refereeing on the pitch and the VAR. I would not let them go to Christmas parties. I would not let them lose nicknames. I would actually encourage an environment where they actually are in competition and don't like each other. You know, a little bit like ITV and BBC. This is, you know, 1 week you're on VAR, 1 week you're on the pitch. This is a professional league with a lot of money. The best players in the world, best managers in the world. You have a VAR, which has got nothing to do with people on the pitch. And if anything, you are there to scrutinize them. And that will increase the officiating who want to get it right on the pitch. And it will increase the decisions we get better with VAR who are wanting to scrutinize the people on the pitch. We will end up with better decisions. This hand-in-hand mates rate shit is actually why we're here. And the PGMOL are right to get in contact with the police about these things. They're absolutely vile, but they're wrong not to self-reflect over 2 years of this, and ultimately the game's in the mud because they won't fix it.
Yeah, 100%. I can't believe it's taken us 15 minutes to mention one of my favourite managers of probably the last 20 years in the Premier League.
What did you bloody say? What did you bloody... Did you say, who said that?
Who said it's that? Good. It's good.
Not going down with Leicester, bloody hell.
I don't know how that's happened, that your impression has become better than mine, and that's slightly worrying, but
as we're doing them early in the morning, and my vote's a bit like, you know, yeah. I feel like I've been sucking on a razor blade, you know.
Do we think what one? Do you think he should be sacked? Two? Do you think he will be sacked?
I don't see how he hasn't been sacked. I don't want him to be sacked. I'm sort of in that position, probably similar to you, Will, where I don't want him to be sacked. But then you look at the result. I mean, losing to Everton and then Leicester at home, and looking at where they are in the league. It does get, I remember this with Ten Hag, I didn't want him to be sacked, but it gets to a point where you have to say you have to be sacked because you can't be in that position in the league with the expectations of that football club. But what I would say is, if he does get sacked, I would not be sat here going, you know, Ange is the problem. It goes back to that Man City game for me where he's falling out with the players and the fans because he's got ambition and the club wants to lose to stop Arsenal. I think that Spurs problems, when you look at Conte, Mourinho, look at what Nuno's doing at Forest now, look at Ange and his ambitions and his expectations. It's very, very clear that football's almost changing. I think for many years, managers always, and still do, take the blame. But I think fans are educating themselves better now that, let's be honest, how much responsibility does a manager have when people above him are doing nothing in a January transfer window and he's playing Dragosin and Archie Gray at the back. And he's got a bunch of players that are, you know, really part-timers. They're not committed. I mean, I don't want to call out names, but you look at the Basumas and the Madisons, they're not even Bournemouth. Bournemouth players are playing every week. You know, they're interested. They're up for it. And Spurs are Spurs. You know, I'm not picking on those two players there. It's been going on for most of my life. Spurs are Spurs. They'll beat a decent team and then they'll lose to somebody shit. I don't know how you solve that problem. And yeah, there'll be a honeymoon like there was with Ange for about 8 months. And then season two, it'll all go wrong again. And I suppose that probably comes from the top.
Yeah, sometimes with Spurs, it's like they've got the arrogance. Sometimes the players go there and they're like at a big club. They've got like the arrogance of a bloke with a big knob, but with like a small chipolata. Do you know what I mean? Like they're at the big club and they've got the facade of a huge member. But if you were to pull the pants down, you know, and that's fine, you know, if that's what you're working with. But just play to your level, like in terms of what they've.
Is that what you do on a night out? If someone says I've got a big knob, you just pull his pants down and go, no, yeah, he hasn't. Yeah. I bet it's really bad if they actually have. You pull it down and go, he has. Well done. I'll buy a pint.
I say change your attitude.
Still arrogant. Yeah, he has got a big knob. He shouts about it, but he's really arrogant.
He came out with no trousers on. No, I just think, yeah, that who would be the perfect manager for Spurs is a question we ask ourselves every time we speak about Big Ange, and even before that. And I think some clubs have got it right in terms of their appointment, but like looking out there now, I don't feel Big Ange at the moment after 10 defeats. They're on 13 defeats overall of the whole season, the same as Ipswich Town. And I can't sit here and say Big Ange is the perfect manager for Tottenham. Mm. But I don't know. I don't know what the answer is if this was a test. I don't know if they can get through the Carabao Cup semi-final and get into the final. I think that buys him a little bit more time, and I really want him to succeed. So I'm sat here with a lot of bias. I can't pretend that because I want him to succeed. I don't know why, but I just, yeah, it's difficult.
Well, they sacked Mourinho before a Carabao Cup final, didn't they?
But it's, you know, like Mourinho would probably give him more reasons to do that, the way he was coming out with different things in the statement. And obviously that was stupid going into the final with Ryan Mason in that Carabao Cup final. But you just think with Big Ange, it's like, he's definitely not trying to feel sorry for his, if get us to feel sorry for him. But like even his post-match press conferences are like, yeah, no, well, the points are going down. And it's like...
Oh, I think the thing in football these days is that the money is so important, especially at somewhere like Spurs. And you'd look at that league table and you'd go, we should be in a race for top four, and we're definitely not going to do that. So they're sort of stuck
bottom
in
four.
They're in a similar situation to United, where the Europa League is almost their only chance. We talk about the Carabao Cup, but if they win the Europa League, you're in the Champions League through the back door. So they might look at that, and they will get better. I mean, whether they sack Ange and bring somebody in, they will get better. Miraculously, everyone who's injured will be back very quickly. And even if they keep Ange, they'll be back at some point and they will get better. I mean, it's a joke. I can't emphasise enough how difficult it is to see Spurs playing with that centre-back pairing week in, week out, and not expect them to score at least concede at least two goals. But I'm with you. I mean, I've seen this all my life with Spurs. I mean, the only thing I've ever seen them win is a cup. In league form, they're an absolute joke. I mean, they probably should have won the league the year that Leicester won it, but they're Spurs. So they're, this is not a new problem. And, you know, where do you go next? I mean, Man City are keeping Pep because there's not really anybody out there at that level. So there's not really, you're not going to get a Xabi Alonso. They've been linked to Ten Hag, for God's sake. I mean, then there's nobody out there, and there's nobody that fundamentally is going to change that attitude at a football club that doesn't appear to want to change that attitude. So I think Spurs will always be Spurs. I can't see a change, but I do think Ange is a good coach, and I think he's unfortunate. So, but we're saying he won't be sacked then. It does. I really thought he would be gone today, if I'm being honest.
I never do this normally, but I have got Twitter open just in case it happens. I just don't think it will happen. One, because of the money and the payout. Two, I don't think they've got a ready-made replacement, which I think Daniel Levy will want, even though we've just talked about Mourinho and Ryan Mason. And I don't know, there's just something that are keeping his fingertips on the edge of the cliff, aren't they, at the moment? He's not been fully kicked off down the crevasse. And I just think, yeah, I hope he does. And Spurs fans probably hate me for saying that because of the rot that they're going through. And no way should he be. This is not vindicating the position that they're in and the way they should have got points, especially in the last couple of games. But yeah, I can't tell you why. I just hope. Oh, it says here, sorry, just on Twitter, Evan Ferguson expected to leave Brighton on loan. That would be a nice signing for somebody.
Slow sports news. That's been going on for about 6 weeks.
Ah, sorry, mate. Not today on my Evan Ferguson news. Yeah, no, keep him up the league. What I was going to say was, it'd be interesting to see if he stays, say they finish 13th, but win the Carabao Cup, if that's almost like the end of the curse and it breaks through this sort of glass ceiling of being able to stop the rot.
The thing is, when you look at their fixtures, Brentford away, Liverpool away, Villa away, Man United at home.
I reckon they'll lose to Brentford and then beat Liverpool away 6-0, draw 4-4 with Villa. That's the thing, isn't it? Like, we sit here, I saw someone post, obviously he'd won that London Manager of the Year award, which is not the most prestigious one, but like how from last season to where we are now, it just changes so much.
I want to talk about the title race. I mean, look, this is what this podcast is all about, you know, with VAR, which is massive for everybody, and a Spurs sack race. I mean, I suppose the weekend we had Liverpool and Arsenal kicking off at 3:00, but my featured watch along was actually Bournemouth against Nottingham Forest. I mean, how proud are you about that? Oh, he's taking the piss. He's pulling faces.
Oh, please watch the EFL. It's always about the top six. It's always about the top six.
Does a Bournemouth Forest thing, and he's getting jealous because I've gone all, you know, niche. But
it was a good game
for about an hour.
I couldn't believe it, to be fair. Like, I watched Match of the Day and like they absolutely blew him away, didn't they? And their
tempo
injuries
was so quick at the start. It was such a good game. Did you watch Man United Fulham last night?
No, I didn't actually. Yeah. Oh, taxi mate, drive out of the way.
That would have been an early. You know when you know Sunday night syndrome where you can't get to sleep. Oh, if you put Fulham Man United on at 7, Seb never gets to sleep, my lad. On a Sunday night, he was asleep by 7:30.
Really? Just watching that.
Yeah.
And Harry Maguire was playing.
He just relaxed him down to sleep.
Yeah, let's talk title race. Less of the Bournemouth versus Forest chat. I think, yeah, title race.
Can Bournemouth get Champions League football? They're still the thing is, though, people are like, Bournemouth. But Forest, I wouldn't give a shit. I'd be like, we're still 4 points ahead of Bournemouth. That's a lot of points in this league.
Yeah, and it's congregating up nicely, isn't it, if that's the right word. Like, you know, or even down to, probably say, down to Villa in eighth, all the way up to Nottingham Forest in third. I think any of those teams could get Champions League football, apart from Bournemouth.
I mean, Chelsea losing, Villa drawing, Brighton losing.
What's going on at Chelsea?
Fulham losing. What did Brentford do?
Brentford won 2-1.
At Palace.
Yeah, which is obviously a tough place to go.
I do think it's starting to break away a little bit now with, like, for the top five, which hopefully it will be top five because we should be getting top five for Europe. We just messed it up last year. But Liverpool, Arsenal, obviously, Man City are going to get top four. Forest are in there. Newcastle are doing well. And maybe Chelsea, Bournemouth. I think five from seven.
Not Villa?
I watched Villa yesterday and I can't believe they've drawn that game. Like, the first half an hour, the game should have been won, but they've not, for some reason, they haven't won it.
Well, as soon as Mings went off, didn't it? Like, there was a 5-10 minute spell after that. They looked absolutely in disarray. And like, I think they've had a lot of injuries at centre back. I don't know, is Diego Carlos gone? Like, I think they might even be a little bit short at centre back going forward. So obviously they've got a big game now against Celtic to get through to the next round of the Champions League in those automatic places. So it's going to be an interesting one.
Mark, if it's all right for you, I'd like to hear from our halftime sponsors.
With a $5 meal deal with new McValue, you pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal, $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus terms and conditions apply.
Let's talk title race because we keep bouncing around. Title race, do you think Arsenal are back in it?
I think it was really important that despite something we've not spoken about, now we have spoke about it, the VAR, I think that winning that game is so important for the title race. I think that it just keeps it going. You know what, I think Liverpool are going to win it, but 6-point gap, Liverpool obviously dispatched Ipswich very easily. 6-point gap, game in hand for Liverpool, I think that's coming up soon. I think that next weekend, something's got to happen. You know, the gap can't be bigger this time next week, and it really probably can't be the same. And I think it's such a massive weekend because Liverpool go to Bournemouth, and everyone's you know, pulling one off for Bournemouth at the moment. And
that's you.
And well, they're bloody good.
Oh, watch by Bournemouth. Watch along.
Nine goals in two games. Bournemouth stand. But Arsenal got Man City next week. So I think if Bournemouth could get like a point or even beat Liverpool and then Arsenal beat Man City, we might have a bit of a title race. But I mean, that as a percentage, yeah, I'd say the chances of that are probably 15%.
If Man City win next weekend against Arsenal, do you put those into a title race just based on what we've seen before, as if they can recapture the form, which they're starting to do a little bit, it can be relentless?
But it's a 12-point gap now, and that's if Liverpool lose their game in hand. Mm-hmm. Or it's a 12, they win their game in hand and then Man City beat Liverpool. It's still a 12-point gap. I mean, that what we need to say here, and it's a shame to say it, but I will, because I'd like it to happen, is that if Liverpool blew a 12-point lead at the end of, well, it'll be February. The next Premier League games aren't until February, so forget end of January. That points gap will be 12 points on February the 1st. If Liverpool were to blow a 12-point gap at the start of February, that would go down as the biggest blowjob in history of football. Wow. Realise what I've just said.
We've seen some big blowjobs in our time.
But that would be the biggest choke. From blowjobs to chokes, that would be the biggest choke in Premier League history, because it was Newcastle in 96 for Man United.
Yeah.
And that was massive. But this is what people are... Man City can't do it. No, absolutely not. They're not good enough as well. Did you watch that Chelsea game? Oh my God. How many times you spend all this money and you don't get a striker and your goalkeeper's dodgy?
I don't get Sanchez. What does he know about the manager, the club that's keeping him in that position? Because
what was he doing on the Haaland one?
Oh my God. I saw something on that. I follow that, XG Twitter thing, and it was like Sanchez turned this in from a 0.02 chance to a 0.42 chance just by his positioning and his craziness.
I was doing the watch along and I said world class from Haaland, and then people were going, you were saying it was world class a minute ago, because I said actually it's not, because realistically he's on his left foot, he looks up and the goal is not in goal. It's a good finish by Haaland, but realistically it's not a world class finish because the goal is not in goal. Like, you've just got to dink it up over him, and I'm sorry, that is the best finisher in the world. That is, toast for him.
Yeah, Phil Foden's starting to purr again, isn't he? Sort of recapturing that form that when he's on his day, he can be. Would you put him in a world-class bracket?
No.
Yeah. I was thinking you this would. The other day. I'd really like to, but I was just like, that's exactly why we can't, because it's not consistent enough. Like, when he is on his day, he's unbelievably world-class, even what above that is, but it's just not consistent enough across, a massive period of time.
I think he has periods where he plays world-class, but to be truly world-class, it has to be consistent. And look, he won Player of the Year deservedly last year, but I would say to those people saying, what are you on about? You said he was world-class last season. He was world-class last season, but you don't stay world-class. Paul Scholes ain't world-class now, is he, at 50? It does disappear. He was a world-class player, but Phil Foden should be a world-class player throughout his 20s and into his 30s. And unfortunately, he's not at the moment. And I think the thing with Foden is as well, he is in a position where he is playing in a team that has dominated football for a long period of time. If you put Phil Foden in a Bournemouth team or a Brentford team, I don't think he stands out as much. So, whereas I think if you put a Saka in, he would.
And also, you'll say this is down to the previous manager, but as an England shirt, we've not really had that performance where you go, this he's taking the ball by the horns and he is world-class in both the City and an England shirt.
Yeah, I think, he's a good player, but I mean, I've got to be honest, Man City, you're right, that reputation, I've always said, where are Man City in the league in relation to Liverpool? I think they would always be the team you're worried about, but the gap's too big. And actually, they're not that good. I would expect Arsenal need to beat them at the Emirates next week, and I would expect them not to lose. Man City, they're vulnerable, and Chelsea could have won that game if they knew how to finish and weren't so shit at the back.
City. I mean, the Arsenal, I think it would just come back to what 11 they can get out on the field, doesn't it? We keep speaking about that squad depth, and I just, especially with the window ending, they're not going to add to it now, are they? Even though we're shouting out for a striker,
I think they will.
So, you reckon?
Yeah, I think they will.
What, the big Sesko?
I don't know what they'll do, but I think they have to do something. And, Man City aren't in a bloody title race, and Arsenal are, but Man City have spent 150 million euros, and that regardless of FFP and 115s or 130s, that's still a shame on Arsenal that, you're letting your season fall apart.
Bless you, goodness.
By not signing players, it's like you say, they're struggling to put a team together, trying to sort of valiantly fight on. Go and buy a couple of bloody players. Surely you've got the money. And to that Manouche would have been a good signing for them, looking at him.
Yeah, maybe Arsenal should get that centre back that City signed as well. That wasn't the best day, was it? I thought that was a bit of a contradiction, I thought, for the Sky Sports stuff about, because the way they were on about was Xerxes when he got pulled off. There's another one. But I just thought that there was a real highlight. I mean, he did have a bad game, actually. I'm over-egging the cake. And I tweeted, Jonathan Woodgate will be watching on for this debut. So he survived. He'll thrive.
Is that not the sort of quintessential mainstream analysis of football now? They've almost gone for they want to be in with the TikTok generation. So they're almost like playing to that, basic.
In hindsight, he just had a really shit half and they had to highlight it.
But I think the way over the top, Like, I remember, but maybe I'm speaking from experience, but look, when I talk about TikTok and that, I think this is where the mainstream get it wrong. They go for like this, you know, TikTok's not that. A lot of the football stuff's on there has got levels and is really interesting. You know, what a flop. He's had a bad 10 minutes. I felt they were sort of pushing down that. And I was like, Vidic and Evra had a terrible debut in a Man United shirt and became legends. And he's 28. Look, I don't like Man City, but I felt sorry for him because, you know, he's made a mistake on the goal and then he gets a yellow card straight after. But I wouldn't be surprised that a 20-year-old being thrown into a game like that might take a little bit of a time to adjust. And really, for me, that's on the manager putting him in there. But you put him in there to, you know they're going to make mistakes. Yoro did it a couple of weeks ago with United.
Yeah, exactly. And then just on the title race, I think the best thing to sort of counteract all of this is Liverpool are just getting on with their business, aren't they? Like, there's been a few draws in there, but in terms of the way that they're picking up the points and the manner in which they're doing it, I think that's the way, if you don't want Manchester City to win the league, that should give you the most confidence overall.
Well, it's funny with Liverpool, isn't it? Because people are talking about, you know, could Man City catch Liverpool? Could Arsenal catch Liverpool? They've not lost a game in the Champions League and they've only lost one game in the Premier League. And it's like, do they look like a team that's about to lose six games in this? They don't. I don't see anybody other than Liverpool. The question is, could Liverpool win more than the Premier League? I mean, a quadruple is on, it's never been done. A treble's been done once before. We don't acknowledge the Man City one because they did it with cheating. So, but, you know, they could do. I mean, for me, if I was Liverpool, I'd say I'll take the league. That's hard enough. But that they could do something. Their form up to this point would suggest they could do something a little bit bigger.
Yeah, and I don't know if I'm getting swept away by the sort of romance of it all, but like, especially with those three players and the contracts not signing, and they could leave and some could stay. And like, you know, I mentioned the last dance every other episode, but in terms of like non-stat analysis, like if you were to get swept away with that and you're Arnie Slot, I think you almost sort of buy into that a little bit, doesn't it? If you are leaving and you are Mo Salah, you're giving everything you can to end on the highest of highs and find that extra 1 or 2%, which for him could take him even to another higher level, which he already is at.
Yeah, let's talk. Well, look, the relegation battle has hotted up a little bit.
Wow.
With that Leicester result.
Words I never thought would come out of your mouth.
I mean, I say it's hotted up a little bit, but that Leicester win against Spurs, that this is what can happen in a relegation battle, is you get a result that nobody expects, although maybe we should have expected it. Leicester now fourth from bottom with 17. Ipswich have got 16. Wolves have got 16. Southampton have got 6. Ipswich play Southampton next week. You'd expect them to go up to 19. Wolves have got some difficult games coming up. I'd say it's 3 from 4, although it is only 6 points between Everton and Leicester. 7 points to Spurs. Wolves are in a big bit of bother.
Yeah, I did predict them to go down. I don't want to go back to that prediction.
You did.
I must have to. I think Everton are clear just because of Moise Ayer coming in, you know, getting an absolute fantastic sort of classic defensive rear guard action performance against Brighton.
Brighton can do one. He needs to get the sack.
No.
He's took 6 points off us this season and then loses to fucking Everton. He's a twat. I know Brighton, they're just enjoying the ride.
They're ninth. But...
mate, come on! They should be where Forest are with that squad. That the amount of points
you can't
they drop,
say that.
They are so inconsistent, Brighton. It's a joke. How do you lose to Everton 1-0 at home again? Happened last year as well.
They're ninth in the Premier League.
Yeah,
this is
crap.
Brighton.
Should have been better than that.
Don't be silly.
Sack
yeah,
him.
What was it?
There's a hipster
there.
Manager in the Portuguese non-league. He's better than him.
I think with Leicester, in terms of their actual team and squad, I think out of those bottom three that got promoted, they were the best to do it. I'm still not convinced on Ruud van Nistelrooy. That's not to say I'm unsold on him. But I think that Spurs one was almost a perfect storm, wasn't it? Where the pressure's building on Big Ange and they get it. It might be a catalyst, but yeah, Wolves... I just like one of the promoted teams to stay up just because, as you say, bang the EFL so much. Like, you've got to have something to have a bit of hope on, haven't you?
Their next game is Everton away. Massive.
Who?
Leicester. And then they've got Arsenal.
No. Can't
Brentford.
Any of them.
West Ham. Yeah, maybe get 6 points from the next 12.
What do you... I think that. And West Ham are clear of that. Potter getting another... What did you make... I saw Carragher speaking about the... Because obviously David Moyes gone into Everton and he was basically saying that I think it was something similar to you had been saying that West Ham fans didn't necessarily want something better than David Moyes. They just wanted something different. But my counteract to that would be, that's fine, but I think you do have to suffer. And they've suffered with Lopetegui because, you know, it's such a changing of the guard. I don't think he got enough time. I don't think to say it would be right. But I think it's a little bit of a contradiction as football fans that we have sometimes. We go, we want this attacking football. That's fine. Look at Tottenham and Big Ange. They want attacking football on the high line, everything like that. And you end up sometimes that does affect results and you might get the better performance. But at the end of the day, we're all looking at the league table.
The Everton, look, they'll stay up with David Moyes. The football will generally be quite crap. And Everton fans can choose what they want to do about it. But I think that the change from Dyche to Moyes is like, you know, having a pair of trainers that you like and then going in the shop and buying exactly the same pair of trainers, just newer. We've all done it, but nothing's going to change. It's just a fresher manager who'll get probably a bit of a bounce, but I think they would have stayed up with Dyche anyway, to be honest with you. Don't really get the plan with Moyes long term. I mean, he's just been sacked from West Ham because they don't like his brand of football. It's not going to change. West Ham are going to have to be patient with Potter. They will. They'll have to be patient. It's the same with Man United, isn't it? You know, Amorim, terrible game last night. Not his fault, but I think Potter will have the same problem as well, where you've got a distinctive style of play, but you're being asked to do it with a set of players that are just not about that. So therefore, I think the modern football fan can be quite impatient in the sense that West Ham fans will be expecting West Ham to start playing like Brighton. We'll give him players that can do that. And it's the same at Manchester United. I mean, the Manchester United manager's saying he'd rather pay his 64-year-old goalkeeping coach than Marcus Rashford, which I get his point. I mean, I don't know how that helps you build relationships with Marcus Rashford and his brand, who jump on people for, you know, the articles in the Sun. So I don't know what they're going to do about the manager of Man United saying that they'd rather have a 64-year-old player. I mean, I don't know how you spin that one into a positive, but
Jim will get a Rashford statement today from the camp.
He put an Instagram out yesterday saying well done to the lads, but I mean, the problem is, I think that...
I like Amorim.
I really like Amorim.
No, I really like him.
No, but I really, really like
him. I love
him. I think all Man United fans like him, but it doesn't mean that... Look, I don't think the criticism of saying this is one of the worst Man United side ever last week, I think that was over the top, that was silly. But I don't know whether we haven't got Monday night football, have we, tonight? So Carragher's white trainers will be safely in their box. But I think if we did have Monday night football, they'd probably have a bigger claim to say, you shouldn't be saying that about a player you're trying to sell.
I think sometimes it gets a little lost in translation, as in, I think he's trying to articulate the fact of like, if a player's not trying, I would play my goalkeeper coach.
Yeah.
And I think that's his overall point. But obviously it's come off the back of a Marcus Rashford question. So obviously that's where it's all going back to.
But he hasn't played in coming up for 6 weeks. And for a manager to be saying 6 weeks after dropping him, I'm not picking him because he's still effective. Obviously, he's not doing it in training still, is he? So
No.
It's like, that is like saying, I've got a player at Man United who doesn't try and doesn't work hard, and that's why I'm not picking him. And it's been going on for 6 weeks. And I think that is...
But it's like, obviously, you talk about it so much with the United stand, and you've probably done it to death even last night with the comments coming out post-match. But even from an outside perspective, it just feels like, it's like, you know, you're having a divorce and then getting couples therapy to try and like, I extend it by 6 weeks. Rashford needs to leave.
Yeah.
Like, there's no point in him putting a statement out today if he wants to sort of counteract what the manager's been saying, because this situation, pre-Amorim, pre-Ten Hag, including Ten Hag, is not working, and he needs to leave and have a new start, because there can be a fantastic player in there, and for whatever reason, and I do cut him a little bit more slack just because of, I just think, there's so much that's gone on in that situation. Like, he's grown up, hasn't he, in Manchester, stayed all around there. Just change. That's what I'm trying to say. Just move, change, and be best for everyone.
That's what I sort of look at it and go, what's the end game here? And hopefully it is leave, because if it's stay, then even if Rashford does start trying, it's like, well, you've already damaged the relationship, haven't you? You know, you've already fallen out. You've already done the interview. I mean, when in life does anybody do all the bad things and then suddenly, you know, it's okay? You might think it might be okay for 6 months. Then you're on holiday in Mallorca. They're looking at another bloke and you go, oh, here we go. You're at it again, aren't you? You're at it again.
Two glasses of wine.
Yeah. I bloody hate you.
You slag. No, that's too far. Champions League this week. Do we ultimately think this group stage table league format has been a positive change to the Champions League?
No, not for me.
I'd like to answer the question that I've asked and put in the running order next week, because I do think we're down for an absolute showdown on Wednesday, just in terms of like the way the league format's going to break, in terms of teams will be in, teams will be out. So I'm going to judge it, even though, like I said, I've asked the question, after Wednesday.
Well, I'll pitch it. I'll pitch my answer before then, and we'll see if it's correct.
Go on.
We've played two more games than we normally do. The old format was six games. We've had eight games, and it's taken six games of no jeopardy to get to a point where there might be some jeopardy. The final week, they all kick off at the same time. There will be a bit of jeopardy, but it will all be over in a couple of hours. I don't think the change is about entertainment. I think it's about money. And ultimately, people forget that in the old format, we only played six games and there was still jeopardy in the final week and the final 2 weeks in four or five groups. So what's the difference between where we're at? We used to have a few groups of four teams where there would always be jeopardy in the last couple of great game fixtures, and it was only six games. We're now playing eight games for a couple of hours of potential jeopardy, where, let's be honest, Man City will still qualify, Real Madrid will still qualify, they'll play an extra couple of games where they'll qualify, and then we'll be into the final 16. It's just about money and games. I think next season people will start to get tired of it. As the novelty and excitement should be in year one, and people are sort of like, I don't know whether it's any good or not. I mean,
yeah,
it's like when you go and watch. I watched Gladiator 2 at the weekend.
Oh right, did you?
And I was just sort of like, it ain't bad. It ain't bad. It reminds me of the Champions League. It ain't bad, but why did they change? Why did they bother doing it? And nothing really happens here. I'm sort of like going, I'm trying to convince myself that it was worthwhile and good. I'm not saying it's a bad film. Do go and check it out, but it's nothing on the first one. And it sort of leaves me going, why bother? You know, what's the third film? You know, bringing up grandkids and taking them to soft play. It was like, I didn't need to know this story. Obviously some characters lived on, but I really don't care.
I think the second one's better than the first one, personally.
He hasn't watched the first one.
Any other Bridgeness, which was a fantastic suggestion from our comment section on Spotify. So, first of all, thank you very much for all your interactions. It does help us. We got up to the dizzy heights of 14. We're going into that top 10, but we need your help. So please drop a follow. Please drop a comment. Please drop a rating. All of those things basically go into a Spotify cocktail and pump us up the tail. Up the chart. So if you can drink that down, that would be lovely.
I tell you what, if you're a porn fan, there's a lot of sexual innuendos in this show this morning.
Yeah, if you sat there with a hard on, because we have a 97-98% male audience, don't be alarmed, because that's fine. Are you watching anything? Have you eaten anything tasty? Are you doing anything outside of the realm of football?
I've started that Black Doves that you mentioned. I wish I'd started it before Christmas, because it definitely has got Christmas going on in the background, although subtle. It just feels a bit weird to anything that's got Christmas in it that you're watching in January just feels a little bit weird. You sort of like, I don't want to see that. I'm dry January for Christmas, but that's quite good. Finished Yellowstone last week. On any other Bridgeness, Pratt of the Week, Paul Merson, and it's actually quite football related. Saw a clip at the weekend where he was talking about Garnacho and Nkunku, and he basically said, I'd drive Garnacho down there to get Nkunku, great player. And I just thought, oh my God, this is, I don't mind crap opinions, but again, this is the flagship show on a Saturday for the Premier League, who've got Premier League rights, and he's feeding that shit out to the masses. And Nkunku is a good player. I'd swap him for Garnacho. The guy doesn't watch football. Yeah. Chelsea fans will tell you this. And Nkunku was a good player at Leipzig. At Chelsea, he's been injured a lot, and he's not doing very well. I mean, I didn't even realize he came on for half an hour in the Man City game. I didn't even know he was on the pitch.
Did he?
Yeah, he was on. He was on for the last half an hour. So Paul Merson, who's clearly probably got an agenda against Garnacho, is like, I would swap Garnacho for Nkunku, who's injury prone, not settled in the Premier League, and is 27, for a 20-year-old who hasn't finished his growth as a player yet, and has actually proved himself in the Premier League in a shit side. So I just thought that is absolutely incredible, but that's what you expect. I mean, him and Tim Sherwood on a night out talking football, I want to be there just for the laugh. I won't say a word. I'll just sit there drinking, listening, writing notes down, saying this is 10 years of Pratt of the Week. Keep it coming. Keep it coming. What's your thoughts on think of controversial topics you'd love to get them onto.
Yeah, exactly. Them and Michael Oliver, that'll be another decision.
Yeah. Lovely stuff. Yeah, apart from that, yeah.
And then obviously by this time next week when we record, the Royal Rumble will have happened. You'll be sat there watching it with Seb.
Not if we record it on a Sunday.
No, it's on Saturday night.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, yeah. Saturday night, 11 o'clock start time.
Have they split it across two nights? No?
Not yet. No, they will do. No. We've got two Royal Rumbles, men and women. Two out of three tag team match and a ladder match as well for the world, for the heavyweight.
Will the Royal Rumble come on at about 3 o'clock in the morning?
No, I think women's will go on first at 11 and then the men should be starting about 1 o'clock, I think.
Oh, there's that's no other matches going on?
There's two other matches, but there'll be about half an hour each. It'll be done by about 1:30.
Mm, okay. I don't know.
Who do you think's going to win it?
Is it too predictable that Cena wins it?
No, not at all.
I think they might have to I don't think Cena will win it. I think it's too predictable that he'll win it.
What's your prediction? Don't be shy. Come on.
Roman Reigns.
Oh, okay, nice. Yeah,
what's yours?
Head says CM Punk.
Oh, I'd like
heart says John Cena.
Hmm,
which is an interesting one.
Talking about American sports, very disappointed this morning. Bills have gone out to the Chiefs, but this is like Man City losing to Brighton. No,
it's
other
crazy,
way around,
isn't it? Like, the NFL's built to have, you know, this such, like, parity and, like, draft, you get the best player, that. And then for them just to be... And it is weird, like, because it gets labelled that tag, but all the time I've liked NFL, it was Patriots and Tom Brady, and then it's been Chiefs. And, you know, the odd winner in there.
I do watch along for the Super Bowl. I've done it every year for about the last six, and I think five of the last four has been a Chiefs in the final.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, and you're right, the whole point of NFL is meant to be like, you know, you get different teams each year that are good, but...
And this was the Super Bowl from 2 years ago, so even that, like, we're not getting...
The thing about the Chiefs is they win so many games by 3 points, which is like, it's like a last-minute winner in football. They've been brilliant all year, but they win every game really tight.
And then they're playing the Eagles, who are like ground and pound running, so it's like literally like David Moyes' Everton getting to the final, and you're like, oh, God. I'll watch it, but I won't bloody enjoy it.
Yeah, yeah. The Bills are a good team, but yeah.
I'll tell you now, I ain't going to watch the Super Bowl.
I will. But it is stacked in the Chiefs' favour because they get home ties all the way to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, but they've earned that for them. Yeah. And same with the Eagles.
Don't you need to tell them that.
People are going,
what's going on? It's corrupt. Yeah.
You know who owns the Chiefs? Michael Oliver.
All right.
And that's the end of that.
Okay. Thanks everyone for tuning in. As always, absolute legends. Looking forward to next week and more. Look, it's a big weekend next weekend.
Oh, it's a big week as well. Interviewing Anthony Gordon on Wednesday this week. We're off to Newcastle. So make sure you check out that on the channel.
Good lad. Proper pro. Wish he was at Man United.
Exactly. I'll do some work for you, mate.
Lovely stuff. All right. Cheers, everyone. Thanks to Niall, the producer. Thanks to Will.
Cheers, Mark. Cheers, Niall.
Make sure you give us a follow. Get your comments in. Let's get up that league table ourselves. We want to get in Champions League spots again. Thanks, everyone, for watching. Have a great week, and we'll speak to you soon.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.